And I was a bending supervisor for Portage for almost 30 odd years. I can't just remember how many, quite honestly. In my apprenticeship, which was with the G&A Wessex at Edenfield, which was quite a good company, we used to do all the work for Portage and Spencer's, it was in those days. And when I was only a young boy, what we used to do, paint the factory, and we used to paint all the houses and the farms, which of course was owned by Horrocks and Spencer's in those days, which is now National Trust. Colonel Porritt gave all the farms and the land on Helmshaw Top Road to the National Trust soon after his son was killed at Dunkirk. Mr. Richard was with the Lancashire Fusiliers, and he was killed very early on at Dunkirk. I believe it was Dunkirk. I'm not sure. The Second World War. Yeah, in the Second World War. His Batman still lives in Stubbins. Harold Duckworth, he's called, and he was his Batman, and he's buried in France, or in Belgium, I'm not sure which. Colonel Porritt gave all the farms and the land to the National Trust. And during the war, I worked at RCI because we were on war work, of course, all through the war. And then after the war, me and another friend of mine had applied to Porritt's to see if we could have a job as maintenance painters. They'd never had them previously. And the directors sent us a letter to say that they couldn't take us on then, because if they did, we would be sent off to war work. So we'll wait until the war was over, and then they would reconsider us. And immediately the war was over, they got in touch with us, and we got the job as the first maintenance painters for Horrocks and Spencer's at Stubbins. Eventually, we found that we couldn't cope with all the work, so of course, I got more men in. And of course, I was able to hand-pick the men that I wanted, because I knew the good painters in the area. And I got three or four of people who I call my friends, and I got them jobs, and they were very, very good. I had a good team. And then eventually, the directors decided to amalgamate all the decorating people from the different branches, and I was supervisor of all the lot, which included quite a lot of about 7 or 8 factories. There was Mossfield at Bury, Manford, Stubbins, Broadway, Helmshaw, 2 at Helmshaw, and that was it. So I'm not just, there was 2 at Bamford actually, so, and then there was 2 more at Lower Group, can't remember the name, doesn't matter. So, and then, all I did then, of course, was transporting. I used to bring the decorators in from each branch, because in those days, of course, there was a fortnight's wage holiday. The trouble was that every manager expected his factory to be painted during that fortnight's holiday. And it didn't work like that. You couldn't cope. So eventually I had to start subletting. And I sublet quite a lot of work out. We couldn't cope with the amount of work that was. Because, I mean, there was 60, 70 houses at Stubbins. There was about 40 at Bamford, and there was only about half a dozen at Mossfield. But there was always the head offices, they always needed doing, and so we had much more work than we could ever hope to carry out. Yeah, all decorating, outside the mill, inside the mill, you know, big rooms. Sometimes it was a nice job in the offices, which we always made quite. That was nice. And the cliff, which is now a nursing home, became the director's residence after Colonel Porritt when Colonel Barrett's son died, he used to have a home at Grange Over Sands called Grange House, or Grange Manor. And he went from Stubbings one night on the train to Grange Over Sands. And when he got to Grange Over Sands, his house was on fire. They incendiary bombed it. And the very place that he lived in. And he went to live in Grange Hotel at Grange Over Sands, and he never came to Stubbings anymore. And that house is now the town hall for, well, the council offices, etc., for Grange Over Sands Council. Yeah. This is just, I suppose that they dropped the incendiary bombs anywhere, and they just happened to let on this place. And when he got off the train, he could see his house was on fire. It's right opposite the railway station, quite a distance away, actually, but I suppose it was on fire, he'd be able to see it. And he had an estate manager, and he used to go and visit him an awful lot, called Mr. Wilfred Booth. He was a grand chap, and he was very, very friendly with the Colonel, and he used to go up to Grange Over Sands on a regular basis. I suppose to keep him informed of everything, but he never came back to Stubbings anymore. I never went up to Grange Over Sands, no, I didn't, no. We worked at quite a number of the director's houses at Elmshore and Bamford. We did all their houses, of course, they all were, and all the directors wanted us, so we had a lot of work that we never did because we couldn't get round to it, the hassle came from the managers because they didn't think they were going to throw a crack of the whip. But we did very well, really. I mean, I ended up with about 20-odd men as a rule, I used to, most of them had their own cars, but I had a van of my own on the car, and I used to use the van to transship them from one factory to another, Sometimes they made their own way there, and then I went and picked them up at night, because I was going around seeing about other jobs and various bits and pieces. So, Donald MacPherson's a firm at Rochdale, Isherwood's at Rochdale. Yes, I got most of it from them. Crown, I used to deal with Crown sometimes, particularly with the wallpaper job, if we were decorating the director's homes or the general offices, we used to wallpaper those, of course, and we used to get some very good flock paper. In fact, the flock paper that we put on at the Cliff, which is now a nursing home, is still on. Yeah. Oh, over 20 years, must be 30 years. 30 years. A red flock. Beautiful paper. I mean, I'm saying it's still on. I have been in for Schwarz for a few years, but it was on last time I went in. All the hall and stairs, which is a beautiful hall and stairs with great big cornices and ornamental plasterwork. And we used to pick all those out in colour, and that was good. That was nice. That was good work. I used to enjoy doing some of that myself, actually. Yeah, we used to pick them out in gold leaf and a bit of red and a bit of green, on the leaves. So. Yeah, there's all the middle of the cornice was all work leaves and flowers and rosettes and all the rest of it. That was a long job, but it was nice. I can imagine it's still good, see? Still there. Well, the flock paper was lovely. It was really good, but it was damn expensive in those days, No, I can't remember. No, I wouldn't like to even have it a guess now, but it was a lot of money. Yeah. But it was just a one-off. We did the hall and stairs, which was a big job. I think we were about, there must have been about 25 or 26 rolls to do the hall and stairs because they were big. They were tremendously long lengths on the actual staircase, This is the nursing home now at the Cliff, which was the director's residence, and it was originally Colonel Porritt's home. And Richard lived there until he went to the war, and he was the MP for Ratcliffe and Bury, was Richard Porritt. Yeah, and he was a member of Holcombe Hunt. He had a beautiful horse, and he had a chauffeur valet by the name of Mr. Robinson. And he lived behind the Cliff, where they've now built another big nursing home behind. And but the stables and the workshop and the garage and everything for the, they had a beautiful car, of course, and it was all in there. And the gardeners, there was a Mr. Ross was the gardener. There was an enormous grandness to the place, and he was a gardener, and he had a labourer to help him with the heavy work, you know. And we found him dead in the potting shed one day. He sat in a chair by a stove in the, and he had a very bad heart, and he was always sucking these tablets under his tongue, and he used to have them like sweets. And we went in one day, two of my lads were working there, and I'd gone up, and we went in, and he was dead in the chair. Mr. Ross, the gardener. Yeah, a nice chap, but he'd obviously just passed away, sat there, you know. Yeah, and I went through experiences with the factory. We had good moments, and we had bad moments. Sometimes we got in at cross purposes with people, but generally, and then we got on very, very well. The maintenance crowd were very good. There was joiners. My own brother was the foreman joiner, just at Stubbins. Yeah, but he died last year. Jim Hoyle. I got him a job there when they needed some more joiners, and he eventually became the foreman. And he was quite happy. He enjoyed it. And we both lived in Porritt's property. I lived at Stubbinsville Terrace, and he lived in Stubbins Street. And eventually the company decided they would sell the houses somewhere. Nearly all the tenants bought them. Because they let us have them at a very reasonable price, you know. So that was a good thing. I think they were wanting to get them off their hands because it was costing money to maintain them, you know. But, so I ended up with a very good house. And I eventually, I took an early retirement, so I got redundancy money. So I was all right. I did very well. Sorry? No, they had vehicles, but we never did them up at all. I don't know where they went to, somewhere in Bury, I think. But, they were having trouble in joining the clips together so that they could see them. They were metal, silver metal, like a silver colour. And when they put them in to join them together, sometimes one tooth would miss going in. And of course when the felt went along, it spoiled the paper. So they decided, we tried all sorts of things, and eventually I got onto MacPherson's, and they found me some sprays. To try like a cellulose spray, and we sprayed them along different yellow and a red, and they found it very successful, so that when they went in they could see whether they were joined or not. And we used hundreds of these. I remember when I think MacPherson's was only supposed to supply Woolworths with these things. And when I came back from MacPherson's with these, I think it was Harry Green that took me into the works, and we got talking to the, you know, the Bobs, and they said, well, try these, you see. By the time I got back to the factory, there was a telephone call from MacPherson's. For God's sake, keep it quiet, because these are only supposed to be supplied to Woolworths. But anyway, we bought them quite regularly, so they must have come, whether they come to some arrangements, whether they kept it quiet, I don't know, but yeah. So, we had about four different colours, actually. Yeah. And they used to set them out on a table and just spray the edges and then put them back in the boxes, and then they went into the work, you see. I don't know whether they still do it or not. Would they have a different way of doing it altogether? Now, I don't know. I haven't been in for years, so I don't know. But I found their stuff very good. The price was always very competitive, very competitive. I don't think you could have done any better anywhere for the MacPhersons. But I had a few good lunches out of them, etc. I suppose I was lucky I had a good job. And the two of us went, and the other chap was older than me, and the manager said to us on the day we went, he said, now who's going to be in charge? And this friend of mine said, well, Harry's going to be in charge. I don't want the job. He said, it says he can be the foreman. So I was the foreman straight away. And I was only about 23 years of age. But I'd already been the foreman at Worsix. Because we were living in the World Paper Shop in those days. So I suppose I got off to a good start, really. And eventually I had more and more and more men. But they were good men. And they were good workers. And I could trust them, you know, most of them. It was just the odd one that was always the odd one, isn't it? That we had to be able to, yeah, to keep an eye on them. But generally, I had some very good work. They're still friends. I still see them, and, you know, even though I've been retired a long time, I'm still very friendly with them all, yeah. I only ever sacked one in all the time I was a supervisor. I only ever sacked one. One or two left for other reasons. They were going, decided they'd had enough painting, and they went into the works, most of them, on machinery jobs and that, you know. But I only ever sat one person in all the time I was there, so I reckon I didn't do so bad. Yeah. Well, yes, it changed considerably, as time went on. Better in some ways, but wages went up, of course. That was one thing we could always do. We could do as much overtime as we liked. Even when the wages went up, we could still work overtime if they wanted. And they used to do quite a bit of overtime. So they did very well. Financially, they were all right. But, I mean, we got to the job, and we bought these spray machines from MacPherson's, these big ones. What they called? Can't remember the name of them now. And of course, we did a lot of the spray work. So eventually, Max on the walls and the ceilings and in the factory, you see. And of course, that you could get on much, much faster, you see. And then we spread all the ironwork with the undercoat and then glossed it all, you see. So it went on much quicker when we got the spray apparatus. I mean, spraying was just coming in, you know, and our demonstrations. And another thing we used quite a bit of was fireproof paint. But I couldn't get that from MacPherson's. I had to get that from a special firm. They had a small fire in one of the departments. And the fire brigade, had a demonstration at the fire station. And this firm had painted a sort of building, with the fireproof paint, and painted it with ordinary paint. And then the fire chief was at the fire station as a demonstration. And it was very, very effective. So we did the ceiling and the walls in that particular room because with the fireproof paint. Sorry? Yes, it's Smith. Yes, Smith on the Sussex. I don't know, it's never been tested that I'm aware of. And I don't, suppose anybody will know that it has fireproof paint on. The directors decided, one of the directors went, came to the demonstration with me, you see. And he said, he was the manager of that department as well as the director. And he said, oh, we're having this on there. So I have no choice, you see. So we did it all over. But it was damn expensive stuff. I don't know whether it was ever... I didn't argue. I mean, he ordered it and it didn't bother... I wasn't paid for it. So obviously he must have permission. He must have been in a position where he could order it, you see. So he said, yeah, we're having this on that, on the... It was the felt, the picking department, what they called, the felt picking. Well, yes, more or less, it was all off-white and creams, and, you know, and then just a bit of colour on the doors and windows, and well, there weren't many windows in the lower buildings, but it was a very high building. When I was when I was an apprentice, I was the monkey, because they used to use block and tackle. It was 6 storey high, and they used to put a plank out of off the roof. It had a parapet wall on the top of the roof, about a yard high, and they put a big, it was one specially made plank, a right thick one, out off the roof, out over this parapet wall, and they put weights on the end, off on the roof, to hold it down, and then they wound me up on a rope sling, like a swing seat, 6 storeys, and I painted the top row windows and the second row windows. Yeah. And they wound me up. I was a pulley. They go mad today, wouldn't they? And I had a hook on one side of the seat and a hook on the other side. And I had a bit painting on that side and I had a bucket on that side with either sand and cement or putty. And my tools, and my scraper, and my duster, and I was only a kid. I'll be about 16 when they did that one. I was the lightest of the lot, so of course they wound me up. And then what we did when we got to the top, I had a piece of string, and I tied it round these ropes, and tied it together so that you couldn't go down, you see. And then when I was ready for a move, I shouted down to them. They were painting the lower windows off a ladder. We had a double 26 extension, which reached up 4 storeys. And I did the top 2 storeys all the way along. And I thought nothing about it. So I got a good introduction to heights and at a very early stage. I thought it was wonderful. I did, really. But I suppose they were glad for me to do it. Yeah. Oh, yes, I have. Yes, I have. I had a lot to be thankful for. Yes, I have. And we had a tragedy. We lost our son. He started on the management. Actually, I got him on the management. And he only worked 6 weeks when he died with cancer. And the firm were extremely good to me. They really were. They were very, very considerate. Yeah, they were very kind when he'd only been there a few weeks, but they thought a lot about him. And it was an awful blow. So I was off work for quite some time. I had a nervous breakdown, actually. Or near enough. I was pretty bad. I was in hospital for some time. After it was all over, you know, it just got a reaction. But the company were very, very good. They really were. So I've had a good life. I really have. And I've made lots of friends. Particularly with the directors' wives. When I took them to John Lyons to pick the wallpapers. John Lyons at Bolton. They had a and used to take them there and they used to pick the wallpaper for their husband's bedroom or we were doing the canteen at the mill on holidays, and I was actually working as well. We were trying to get a lot of work done. And we left the canteen and went down to our lunch. And when we came back, somebody had been in, and the tins of paint, of course, as you will probably know, were always bad to pour when they were full, weren't they? Well, whoever had been into the canteen, we hadn't locked the door or anything, we just left it open, and the canteen was all open, and was in the kitchen. And they'd poured some of this blue paint into a tin, and made an awful mess on the countertop and on the floor, and there was some fake mark out of the canteen. So when we came back, I was absolutely furious. So we followed these fake marks as far as we could, and I looked around, and I found this tin of paint that he'd planted, you see. And I had a good idea who it was that had done it. So I took it down to the paint shop. I poured most of it back into the tin in the canteen kitchen, and we cleaned all the floor up and everything. I didn't say anything to anybody, and I took it down into the paint shop and I poured raw linseed oil in it and stirred it up, you see. And of course, raw linseed oil doesn't dry. Boiled linseed oil will make paint dry. Raw linseed oil stops it from drying, you see. And put it back again, put the lid on and put this tin back where he planted it, you see. And that was the end of that for quite some time. And then it was the chap who was supposed to be the watchman as had done it. And a few weeks later, we were all in the blacksmith shop having a meeting or something. And he came in and he said, bloody paint the other this for it never dries. He painted all the woodwork in the house and it wouldn't dry. And I said, I'll learn you a lesson. he was the watchman. He was supposed to be making sure nobody pinched anything, and he was doing it. I won't tell you his name because he went to living away. But he was furious. I bet he was anyway.